It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis, Kevin Marks, and Lauren Weinstein join us to talk about lots of stuff, including Apple's curved watch. Looks like it might be more than a rumor. Unfortunately, the Chrome Pixel is less than a rumor. And patent law. What's wrong with it? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 185, recorded February 13th, 2013, 143. This Week in Google is brought to you by Podio from Citrix. Manage your products with files, instant communication, and collaboration all in one workspace. Start using Podio today. It's free. Just visit Podio.com to sign up, set up your first workspace, and invite your team to get started. Work the way you want to with Podio.com. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG2. Don't forget to try their new developer platform for complete code control. And by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm. LegalZoom provides self-help services at your direction, such as affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG to receive $10 off at checkout. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers not just Google. I want to say that right up front because I don't want you to be disappointed when we actually mention things like Twitter, Facebook, and other stuff. Gina Trapani is off this week, but we've doubled up. We've doubled down. Jeff Jarvis is here, a professor of journalism at the City University of New York, the author of What Would Google Do in His Latest Public Parts. Hi, Jeff. Good to see you.
Hi there. Thank you.
And Jeff invited us to replace Gina just for today with Lauren Weinstein, who is, just when
Lauren
you
is, let me say this up front. Lauren is, I'm glad Lauren and I finally get to meet here, but he is my favorite person on Google Plus, period. Full stop. A master of the form. Yeah, people like Elgin who do really well writing posts and that kind of stuff. But Lauren uses Google Plus, I think, perfectly for linking conversation, adding value, and he's really smart and has a great history and adds all kind of stuff. So I've been dying to meet Lauren one way or the other because we often also agree a lot. And so this is a way to meet finally. Hello, Lauren.
Welcome.
Yeah, very, very nice finally meeting you, and I think I should leave now.
It's only downhill. And also, I mean, when I said double down, I meant it. We also have Kevin Marks joining us, former Googler, former Apple employee, one of the guys behind QuickTime, and early proponent of podcasting, who is now working for Salesforce. It's great to have you, Kevin, and your crows.
Sadly, a stag at Twig this week, but Gina will be back next week.
Yeah, we're gender blind here. We don't know what's under the table. We don't care. Could be anything.
Are you talking about my prostate again?
I'm walking in the door and I'm thinking, I think at some point I crossed this Rubicon. I am now entering old age. And I thought, the only person I know who would understand when I say that is Mr. Jeff Jarvis.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks very much.
I'm walking a little slower, and then I find myself wearing the kind of hat my grandfather would have worn. And I thought, when did I get to be an old man? When exactly did that?
I hope we're not going to be getting the kind of commercials we get on CNN at 11.
No, thank God we're not there yet. Good news. Good news. Our commercials are all stuff young people would be interested in. Let's start talking about the news. There's quite a bit to talk about. And I think with Lauren here, there'll be a lot of discussion about a free internet. Here's my hat, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to see this.
Yeah. So there's two ways I can go with this. I got this in Nolens. There's two ways. I can go the Hunts Hall, Leo Gorsy, Bowery Boys look. See, only Jeff knows what I'm talking about there. Or I can do the snap brim, and then I don't know what I am. I'm an old man.
You are.
Yeah.
Well, isn't this like a Breaking Bad thing now?
Well, it's not quite. You know, it's interesting you should say that, because he wears
kind of a jazz hat with a narrower brim, but it's very similar. It's a telescope brim called a, what's it called? I can't remember now.
Pork pie
pork
hat.
Pork pie, thank you. He wears a pork pie. This is not quite a pork pie. So I got a pork pie.
Leo, how many drinks did you have before you bought that?
I had a number of primary colored beverages named after weather phenomenon. Chiefly the hurricane. I believe there was a tornado, a lightning storm, a hailstorm. I don't know what the hell I was drinking. It is fun in New Orleans. That was a lot of fun. I'm glad to be back, though, because that's hard work. The Google Reader apocalypse is upon us. Google feed reading service unusable.
It's working fine for me.
Since Sunday. This is what TechCrunch says.
I didn't have any problems, and I use it constantly. So,
I think it does this every now and then. It has little burps in posting lots of things that are new. But obviously, Sarah had trouble with it. I didn't have trouble with it at that point, but I see this now and then. And I get the same thing on my blog. There's some blog that links to me from its sidebar, which means every post they post shows up as a comment on every post on my blog, which is kind of annoying.
So Google has kind of not paid a lot of attention to Reader. I mean, I think some of the experiments with sharing in Reader made it to Google Plus. But do people really do people still have a standalone news reader or do they still?
I check Reader every day, but I'm old and weird.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing with Reader is that it doesn't have many users, but it has huge numbers of intensity.
Yep.
When I was at Google, there was we had like weekly stats meetings for Marissa, and one of them was, oh yeah, Reader has the highest number of pages per user, but no users, which was there every day, every week, along with Orkut has the highest number higher number of page views in search, which was one of those things that everyone.
What do you do with a product like that has small number of highly devoted fans? It's kind of like Twit.
Well, it depends who you are, If you're a startup, then you say, I'll charge them $10 each and you're fine. That's how Pinboard works. If you're Google, you're like, well, this is mass market enough for us. We'll take the engineers off it and make them do something else.
It's the way I follow the news all the time. But what I worry about more is that more and more sites are dropping their RSS feeds. So if RSS dies, the Reader follows, right?
Well, it's the other way. Also, the other way around is that Reader is also used as a back end by lots of people because it's hosted by Google and is reliable. So lots of sites use it for feed sync. I've forgotten his name. The guy who wrote the original Mac feed reader wrote a post about this saying, warning, when this falls over, a bunch of things are going to stop working.
Because Lauren Brichter or somebody else?
No. I'm getting old. Okay, so
that's our theme today, the old fart show.
We can't remember stuff because we put it onto the computer and now it's gone.
Lauren, does it bother you?
Is it a social network that's been discontinued?
Certainly some sites don't do RSS. More of those sites don't just do excerpts on RSS, don't put the complete article on there. Does that bother you?
It doesn't bother me so much as long as there's enough there for me to find out whether I have any interest in the article or not.
And then you click and go to the
site. And then I click on it, and I'm perfectly happy to give people clicks. I mean, I don't object to that. And there's some sites that don't include the whole articles just because they're afraid no one will ever visit the site if they see it all RSS. I don't have a problem there. One of the worst is like if there's just a headline, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Fox News does that, but of course there's no good reason to ever.
Well, and the headlines at Fox News are deceptive. I mean, you just can't tell what the article's going to be from the headline.
Yeah, and that's why they only put headlines.
Right. You might want to click this and find out what we're really talking about.
Well, that's what RSS started out as, and then we grew it into like long form posts. It was originally a thing for sending headlines around.
Oh, really?
It was originally built for Netscape, for the Netscape homepage, and you could put a feed up, and it would give you a little sidebar of things to click through to. That was the very first version of RSS. And then,
really?
And then Dave Weiner picked it up and said, oh, this goes with this blogging thing that we're trying to make sense of, and evangelized that and got everyone else to adopt it. And then blogs were, for a long time, these pages that you basically had a page a day, and it was a set of links, and it looked like tweets.
Right.
If you go back to the archives of old blogs, they didn't have titles.
It's like Waxy links and stuff like that. Yeah,
Waxy links and like the old scripting news, if you look at them. And Dave's point of view on it was, I'll edit this during the day, and end of the day, I archive it and start a new one tomorrow.
Right.
And then I think it was Movable Type that came up with the one page per post thing. And that meant that you had
yes.
a presumption of a headline and a story.
Well, it's also comments. the permalink as page.
Permalink as page, yes, as opposed to permalink as, what do you call it? Hashtag, not hashtag, hash URL thing within a time-based page.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because Hacker News has always bugged me because they're one of the sites that only puts the headlines in.
Well, you know, here's an interesting thing, Leo.
I love Hacker News. I wish I could see excerpts.
There's a company that I work with called that has a product called Repost.us that makes articles embeddable like a YouTube video, traveling with brand advertising analytics and links. Very, very interesting. One thing they found is that there's very little overlap as a rule. They work with companies like Agence France-Presse and NJ.com, where I work with, and there's very little overlap in the creator's audience to the embedder's audience. So you get a new audience. Here's the interesting thing. You have the full article there with your own ads and your own brand and everything else, right? And you don't lose any SEO and so on. The click-through rate from a full article to the originator's site is running 5 to 7%, very high, which says that your content is your best ad. If you read the whole article, you're more likely to click through than if you just read a snippet.
That's bizarre because you've seen the whole article.
But what you're saying is, gee, you got a sister like this at home?
I want to see
you
more. Yeah, more right.
Right? And, right. And so you have in – here we go, folks. Get ready. We have in Germany the Leistungsschutzrecht.
Where's the reggae when we need it?
I know. Where they're trying – you got to have Fred from the Howard Stern Show already. where they're trying to argue that snippets are too much and snippets are theft and all this kind of stuff. Right. And what you find out from Repost on Us is that the whole content is a better causer of links. And we found that out in the RSS days. Where putting out right. your whole feed sounded ridiculously illogical, but we found that in blogs and The Guardian and places like that, found that putting out the whole feed was actually better for you.
Right. Well, so there's a sort of corollary here, which has been striking me continuously for a while, which is that citation used to be, here's a compact way of referring to something so you can go and look it up somewhere else. And there's been a long-going debate about how you do citation on the web, which isn't a hyperlink, how you cite things that don't have URLs, for a long time. And it's now become very, very clear that the way you cite something reliably is to quote it. Because if you search for the quote, that's unique enough, you'll find the original and the other people who posted it too. And so there's this sort of weird thing where the citation becomes the quotation and vice versa.
Is it really important to maintain RSS feeds and Google Reader in an era where people are using Twitter in a way as their feed, their link generation? Isn't that why RSS is kind of going
I think there needs to be some way to have a feed that comes direct from the source. And
what kind of it does? If I follow The Economist on Twitter, it's more of a curated feed from The Economist,
right? But if we're concerned that headlines are too short, and a whole article is best, where does that leave us? You know, when you have 140 characters to work with,
right? Well, what if Twitter starts putting excerpts of the articles, or maybe that thing you were talking about, Jeff, in line in its website?
Yeah, they are doing that. But here's the other thing: RSS. A lot of services that like NewsCred or Daylife before it. They use RSS as the means to get alerted that there's a new headline and to be able to take the content, not for display purposes, but for analytical purposes. So you can do things like then cluster articles into stories like Google News does. Right? I don't know how Google News – they probably scrape because they're good at scraping.
Right.
But a lot of other sites use RSS as a means to get a true feed for back-end purposes too.
It's funny. After
we have ways of doing that, right? You know, we have HAtom, which is a way to mark up your web page to say this. Here's the structure you would expect from a feed with classes. We did a micro format for that 5 years ago. There are new things in the latest HTML5 spec that are designed to make it easier for you to do that. But the tension is, you don't always want people to pull your content out without taking the ad. So you there's a sort of with HTML5, you can mark stuff up as nav and aside And there's now main, and then there's a whole series of section and header things that you can do to make your page easier to parse for things like feed readers and readability and stuff like that. But the challenge is there's a tension there between, no, I want you to take my ads too, please stop trying to deconstruct my page. So right. there's always a back and forth between the two. But if you actually want parsability, we've got HAT and we've got HNews, which is an extension of HATOM with focus on news publishing. So it has bylines and it has datelines and you know, the things that you need for news. It's perfectly possible to do this, but the debate is on the legitimacy of parsing a web page with something other than a browser. And that's the thing we're kind of losing. You know, when Google started out, they could write a web search engine because the presumption was you could crawl the web with anything. And if you try and do that now, it's actually very hard. If you try and crawl Facebook with something that isn't a browser, it says go away and get yourself a browser. You're using something we don't support. And many sites now have robots.txt setups that only allow Googlebots and not other crawlers. So if you're trying to build something like, you know, I built at Technorati or Spinner have built or a bunch of these, you know, any kind of public web crawler, it's much harder now than it was 10, 15 years ago, because the sites are now explicitly have a very different worldview and are trying to make the web not as crawlable and linkable as they were.
The good news is Google says as of last night, users began noticing issues with the Google Reader. They have now been resolved. For everyone who was affected, we apologize. And you're right, it's all working. And then I went to Google Reader. I thought, oh, I forgot how great this is. And yeah. Started scanning articles.
Well, the other thing Google Reader is really good for, and this is the subtle thing, is the search box at the top is a search that's constrained to the things that you followed,
right.
Which is really useful for the I read that thing, where the hell was it type searches. Ah.
But the truth is, I used to have, I still have in my reader, a huge list of feeds, probably 80 or 100. And the truth is, I use it for, number one, my ego searches, right. And number two, three or four feeds of things that I go to regularly, and I've reduced immensely my use. What about you guys?
I have a folder called top_top, in fact, that has a bunch of things that are update not very often that I want to make sure I catch. And I have a bunch of comics that I check in every day and read the comics XKCD and Dilbert and Questionable Content, Calvin and Hobbes. And then I have a bunch of other blogs that I want to know when they update, and they're in my top list. Then the rest of them are in another folder, which I don't read, but it's there so that when I want to remember where I read something, it's got all the tech news sites and stuff, so I can use Reader Search to find the story, because Reader Search is actually...
Lauren, it pisses me off, but you're often ahead of me in finding a headline that I want to link to too, and so I link to you. Where are you finding the stuff? How what's your habit?
Mostly Google Reader.
Interesting. All right. Yeah.
I have a real long list, and I've gotten real good at scanning through it fast. I probably miss things from time to time, and I just start starring, and then I go back, and when I see things that are interesting, I pull them out. But I'd say probably 75% of those kinds of items are coming from Google Reader.
Yeah. I find it amazing that Kevin Mark's Google Reader is still giving him new Calvin and Hobbes episodes. I really want to... I need that feed.
they're old ones, but they come around again. You know, there's enough Calvin Hobbes episodes that I've forgotten them by the time they come by again.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more. What a good panel. Chat room, if you've got some stuff you'd like to talk about, Lauren Weinstein's blog is fabulous. Lauren, lauren.vortex.com. And we could just go through the articles here and find enough to talk about for this week. But anything.
Well, and go to Lauren's Google Plus feed, too. You get great stuff.
Yeah, I started Lauren, you don't have a header. You just have a blank in your Google Plus at the top there. It's just a white space.
Right. No, there's no photo there.
That's intentional.
It's a photo of white. Actually.
Yes. In fact, when I click on it, that's what I get. Is it something about snow? What's going on?
It's emptiness. it's emptiness. But yeah, I mean, one day I'll put something there. But
I like it. It's just a big blank. And then when you click it, you get blank.
Yeah, that was harder to set up than you might think. Actually,
was it?
It really wants you to put something real in there.
Yeah, they do. I was just wondering if there was some. You're making a statement with that.
It's not terribly cosmic. No.
you just like white space.
It's either that or some kind of obnoxious animated GIF, I guess.
Yeah, that's the problem. What could you put there that would be?
The New York Times, you know this great, the great Twitter account NYP on it.
Yes,
which finds all the trend stories. 1 minute ago, guys, GIFs are very popular on the internet, and the Times
is on it. we are going to come back with more in just a bit, but first a word from our friends at Citrix. They have a new product they want to let you know about. Actually, a company they recently acquired that really does, the more I use it, the more I like. The problem is it's very difficult to describe what it does. So really the message here is sign up for Podio for free, podio.com. Create your first workspace and start playing with it. It's the idea is to use a central spot on the web that combines all the information that you need in your work, things like files, email. You could even have a feed that's kind of like a Twitter feed, a company feed. I'm going to log into our Podio account here for the Twit Network. We've been using this more and more. We just really like it. You can sign in with Google+, Facebook, Twitter, of course. It will incorporate your Google information like contacts and so forth. And it just becomes a very wonderful repository of information. We have a Twig account in Podio. We have a This Week in Tech account. And I've set up, and we're going to start inviting people to our editorial advisory board inside here in Podio. The Podio is, again, hard to describe, but it's all the information that you currently have in a bunch of different places in one spot, your Google documents, including word processing, spreadsheets, email, combined and managed. You've got great back and forth instant communication, better than email. Workflow is managed. You completely can customize it. They have workspaces for every possible team and project. It's not exactly a project manager either, although you could use it for that. I think it's something you would just use day in, day out. Podio, P-O-D-I-O. .com. The activity stream is a really nice feature, by the way, that shows what's going on in the workspaces and what's happening. We have a workspace called Make IaaS Join Podio. One of these days. Tom Merritt is the lead IaaS enforcer. You can use it for silly things, too. podio.com. Get in there. Sign up. It's free. Create your first workspace. Invite your team to get started. I think you'll be impressed with what you can do with Podio. And you know what? Share your Podio experience with me. Let me know what you are doing with Podio so I can show this on the air, because it really is fantastic. P-O-D-I-O, Podio, .com. Do you have Google Now yet, Jeff, or is it still not now?
No, I mean, I've always had it. It just doesn't do that much. I uninstalled it and reinstalled it.
Now there's more in Now. So look at your Now.
How am I going to get to that?
In order to use Google Now, you have to have a Jelly Bean phone.
I don't get any of the fun stuff. I mean, it's giving me the weather, which is fine. It's giving me some stocks. That's it.
They've added Fandango. They've added a whole. Go ahead.
You can make it do more if you when it says show more cards, you can do that.
I know. I've done that. I've signed up for every one of them.
He's got some weird thing going on.
I've told them they can look at my underwear in the woods or something. Drawer. I've said everything.
in other words, you're coming up irrelevant, right?
Apparently, he's not relevant.
It's Tom Morris's birthday. Facebook's up 1.94%, and it's 61 degrees in San Jose. That's what it's saying.
That's not great. No, you need more than that.
It's not that great.
They've got Rotten Tomatoes reviews in here, Fandango tickets, and Zillow real estate listings now. But I don't know. Does that mean if you
should move?
Still, real estate. It tells you what your house is worth every day. That'd be depressing.
Let's see. I've got all the birthdays from Google Plus. That's kind of a. Let me see here. What else? Harlem Shake videos. How did they know that I was into that?
You Google searched it.
I must have searched for it. Netflix is up another $8. What's going on? Netflix almost. It's at $186 now. I love this. These are all my packages.
This is all the people who like House of Cards. They're buying Netflix stock.
That might be it. House of Cards has really done well for Netflix, hasn't it? And the weather report, my next appointment.
Look at all that you got. Look at all that.
I got a ton of stuff in here.
Lauren, are you on Android?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you get?
Nexus 7 and a Galaxy.
Yeah, I love it.
I get Google Now stuff, but not all that much. It's not as much as I would like to see.
Maybe I just do so much surfing. now on...
There's all kinds of things I had to do. I had to go to my Google Apps account and say it was okay. The I, as administrator, had to say it was okay that I, as Jarvis, was allowed to put the history up and all that. I did all that.
But we're hearing more and more that Google now is starting to be part of more of what Google's doing. I mean, it looks like Google now is... It's going to get into notifications. It's going to be...
I think it's critically important. It's what my argument around media is that media treated us all as a mass, and it has to treat us as individuals. And Google now is all about treating us as an individual.
And yet this is the ultimate in creepiness, isn't it? Isn't this what bothers people? Now you can specify your mode of transportation for your commute. You could say, I want to know what public transit is, not driving.
You can't say bicycling. You can only say public transport or driving.
That you get the update, dude. Driving, public transit, walking, or biking now available.
Uh-huh. Oh, I'll change the preference. No, the problem is I want biking plus public transit because that's what I do.
Yeah, you need... Yeah,
you Californians are so complicated.
We're too complicated for Google now.
I bike to the Caltrain. You know, the public transport is really easy. There's one thing. It's called Caltrain. Bike to that.
That doesn't take
San Francisco, and then you bike.
Yeah, you need that. You're right. Do you bring your bike on to the train, or do you have a bike waiting for you?
No. I have a bike that I take on the train.
It's one of those fold-up bikes.
No. This is Caltrain. This
he's setting it. He's setting it. According to. According to Netflix executive, speaking of House of Cards, it is now the most watched thing on Netflix right now, showing that Netflix, in their $100 million gamble, this was a smart move. You may remember Netflix started doing original programming on Netflix. They said, we're going to bring back Arrested Development. They're doing House of Cards, which is a Kevin Spacey production, an American remake of a British series, which you've all watched apparently and loved. And it is very hot right now, and I'm not surprised. It's really good.
They're not giving any numbers, though, are they?
This is at the All Things D Dive Into Media conference. Right. He did not share any specific audience numbers. There was a good article in The Atlantic about how this $100 million thing makes economic sense. In fact, Netflix, with $7.99 a subscriber, is doing a little more profitable than HBO, which makes about $7 per subscriber. And has roughly the same number of subscribers, around 30 million.
More stuff.
Pardon me?
It has to make more stuff. What's interesting, though, to me is that we have the synchronicity of being able to watch things together on Twitter. That's blown away.
But that's old school now. I mean, I think the new way is to watch a series all at once.
Yeah, right. So what that means is this idea of the shared experience, once again, gets borked.
Well, no. The thing is, it's become a bimodal thing. You fall into one bucket or the other. You're either all watching the Grammys or the Super Bowl or something together, or you're catching up with it. And
I suspect we're all afraid of giving spoilers. What's interesting here is that you could have watched Downton Abbey.
You can't really tweet it, can you? Because it's a big You're right.
Arguably there's a service here, which is my friend's tweets synchronized with the program I'm watching so that I can see the jokes as they say them. You know, and the challenge is constructing that as a service. But, you know, you think I remember having a conversation with David Weinberg about this a while back, which was where you sit there and wisecrack with your friends while you're watching something. We did it for the State of the Union or something like that a few years back. And then what you want is that same thing, but for watching pre-recorded media. So as you're watching House of Cards, you get your friend's wisetracks time to that episode.
My son Jake was going to build that app, and I wish he had.
See, and then there's people like me who would throw the data off completely because I'm watching old Hammer horror films, The Man from Planet X, and you can go online forever, and there just aren't a lot of people who are watching that at the same time typically.
But that's the point. See, if you don't have to watch it at the same time, if you could have like Mystery Science Theater 3000 from your friends that shows up, so as you watch it, you're adding to the commentary on that episode.
But it'd be great because you want to outdo each other with your quips,
right? So then you go back and go, okay, I've just thought of the joke. I can go back and rewind and put the thing just in here. It becomes like the Rocky Horror Picture Show script, which is the sort of refined, 1970s version of this, where people thought of the jokes that went with the movie and wrote them down, and then they go along and say them to the playback.
You have the little android robots and everything. you know, with the antenna sticking up into the screen.
Yeah. Rocky Horror Picture Show as a Service. There we go.
They're talking about making Google Now a widget. Techno Buffalo says your Nexus may have a Google Now widget.
Well, there was a new screensaver that I have been failing at this. I need Gina here to help me. Hold on a second here.
A Google Now screensaver?
Kind of. It's called Dash Clock.
Oh.
It was done. Didn't you see that, Lauren, on Google Plus? It was done by a Googler. And it's a widget that puts a whole bunch of data into your lock screen. But I can't get it to become my lock screen. I don't know how to do it. It says move it to the right, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, to do the lock screen stuff, you have. I think there's a you have to enable that specifically, or you can't get the data. They can't get the data in there at all. Oops. I haven't played with the lock screens too much.
Yeah, because you can slide between lock screens. Hang on.
Oh. And we did mention last week in the Google changelog that notifications. Google Now will come to your notifications. I like this.
That's a big deal.
But with Microsoft going after Google with this new Scroogled campaign, don't you think that Google's got to be a little careful about admitting how much it knows about people? And Google Now kind of lets the cat out of the bag.
Oh, no, I think it's the other way around. I think the Scroogled campaign, you're like, sorry, why is this a problem? I actually saw one of those. My son was watching hockey, so I was seeing ads on the
TV. They're putting ads on TV, which surprised me. The original Scroogled was just like a web campaign. Now they're actually putting ads on TV saying, Google's reading your mail.
Wife was looking over his shoulder saying, why have you got ads for bankruptcy in your Gmail?
Right.
And he said, oh, because I made a joke about mortgages. It's like, you don't understand that Google is slightly subtler than that. But also it was...
Oh, there is a Google Now widget. When did you get this, Chad?
It's kind of broken.
All you have to do is update the search app, and then you get it. So cool.
That's a nice little widget.
Yeah.
It's Ashley Paramore's birthday. It's 59 degrees in Petaluma, and you're going to the gym at 4.
Exactly.
So Laura's been writing about the Scroogled thing a lot.
The Scroogled campaign.
Let's talk about Scroogled.
It's a new one. It's really pretty dismal. What's really fascinating is it shows that people just don't care about the pitch that Microsoft is trying to make now. They launched that campaign launched a week ago, just about, I think this evening it'll be a week or just, you know, probably.
It was in the Super Bowl, wasn't it?
Yeah, or within a day. Yeah. I think, you know, when they actually launched the campaign per se, when the site went up, when they modified the actual.
The original Scroogled was going after Google Shopper. And I think this was not illegitimate, saying, hey, what might have been what was a search engine showing shopping results is now all ad based. That was not unreasonable, but this one's ridiculous.
Of course, Microsoft always had, you know, they have paid shopping ads too.
But they didn't make a site of all paid shopping ads. It used to be a site of unpaid search results.
So now what happened with the new campaign? They went after Gmail on the basis that Gmail is reading your mail, which of course, you know, we've known all along. Just like ISPs scan for spam and phishes and things, Google is, you know, machines are reading mail in an automated way to do the ad display, and you can turn that off because there's an ad preferences manager if you want to not deal with that. So they launched this new campaign.
So this petition is bogus that says,
It's legit, but the thing is, in a week they had a target of 25K, and they've got. When I looked a little earlier, it was 54.28.
Yeah, they only have 5,000 signatures. Nobody cares at all.
And what's worse is they have a Facebook page that they launched at the same time, which, as far as I can tell, they've removed the link from their main Scroogled page because it's just so awful, and it's gotten up as of today to 194 likes. and virtually all of the comments are anti Microsoft and pro Gmail. So I can see why that link probably wasn't serving.
It's not on that page anymore. You're right.
Yeah, it's gone as far as I can tell. Yeah. So, yeah, I think most people, they understand how this works, and I just think this is not hitting a chord for Microsoft in terms of going at this way. And I think it's seen as mean spirited too.
Yeah. Plus, it's oxymoronic to say that you like Microsoft.
I don't know. I think Microsoft's probably smart to say, "Hey, we're the new underdog." Not a bad pitch.
Nobody buys that.
Well, if they can get somebody to buy it, it's good. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody knows Microsoft's also reading your email, just not tying it to targeted ads.
They're not as smart.
I mean, anything's any service is
well,
doing.
Well, the thing is, you know, if you've got Outlook, you can't even read your own email, let alone let Microsoft read it. So. It has ads in it. It's because they can't spam filter.
Right.
You know, Google, they take out other people's ads and they put in their ads. I'll take the trade off. I've got an Outlook mailbox. It's horrible.
Yeah. We should mention, Lauren, you are doing some consulting for Google right now, right?
Yeah, not involving anything like this, but, you know, definitely full disclosure. Always.
For purposes of full disclosure. Yeah. A financial analyst affirms Google is paying Apple, this is hard to believe, to be the default search on iOS, $1.3 billion. I hope this isn't...
They're getting a total revenue, one estimate is $1.3 billion, and of that,
year.
Google's paying Apple a billion.
Oh, so the total revenue is $1.3 billion.
$300 million.
So the $300 million is just like affiliate payment kind of thing.
To Google.
To Google.
Google keeps $300 million and pays Apple $100 million.
I get it.
That's what the report says.
Right.
Okay.
And that's an estimate. That's not an official number, right?
Right.
Absolutely an estimate.
It's Morgan Stanley.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure if Google breaks that down, but they...
Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, Google gets greater value in that because,
there's
again,
a lot of traffic.
I always say Google wants to know people. So it gets direct revenue from the ads on search there, but it also has, you know, a hook into us as people, and I think that matters.
So Mozilla, this is one of the ways Mozilla, in fact, the primary way Mozilla makes money is through fees from Google for having Google search on the Mozilla toolbar. Right. And we always presumed that Apple was making... Apple was making some money from Google, but not this much. It shows how much it's worth to Google, is what I guess what we're saying.
Well, it also shows how good Apple has been at taking over a big chunk of the search, you know, of the using of the web. That's the point. This isn't like a flat fee. This is a payment per usage thing.
Per usage,
and it's ramped up enough that it's reached a significant amount of money.
Yeah.
Because Apple has a lot of people who use their phones for searches and their iPads for searches.
There's a debate over whether this is revenue sharing or a straight fee per device. One of the analysts thinks Google is actually paying Apple $3.20 per iOS device.
Which wouldn't be unreasonable at all. The lifetime value or the annual value of those users.
So the rumors that Apple might try to boot Google from the Safari search bar is bogus then, right? It's a lot of money.
That works so well with maps.
Yeah, and who they're going to go to? Bing? I mean, I think, you know, come on.
Yeah, when I go to Facebook and do a search and it comes back with Bing, I laugh every time. It's funny.
Well, it's a good name. Makes you laugh.
Ned Ryerson.
Yeah. Google, okay, so anything more to say about that? We all agree that's probably the case. And it makes sense for everybody, all parties.
It's one of the things. Google wants people to use Google. They'll happily pay you that, and they will have done some, like, very careful measurements of whether it's worth it for them, and they'll be paying the money. If it wasn't worth it, they'd stop.
It's interesting that this Google campaign is getting so little traction. Do you think that's because... I tie it into this because... Apple users probably don't care that Google's paying Apple. They want Google on their iOS device anyway. Do you think
we like Google in the UK?
Basically, people are not afraid of Google.
No, and we've had this anti-tax campaign in the UK trying to go after Google and Amazon and Starbucks, and it's hurt Starbucks quite a bit. But people just like Google too much.
Interesting. Why is that?
It gives us value.
It gives us value. It's not a question of trust. You think it's because we actually get value for our...
It's because they're actually good at the feedback loop. You know, they are very good at making the search give you what you want. And so when you go and try something else, it feels slightly off. You know, Bill Gates was on Reddit this week. He did an AMA.
Yeah,
and he
that's
said,
kinda cool.
As far as I can tell, the Bing is better than Google. And it's like, well, it's better than Google for you, probably.
They're running those ads, by the way, downtown. Now it's in downtown San Francisco, where they offer you an Xbox if you do a search and you choose Google over Bing. And of course, they edit the ads to only show people who chose Bing. We don't know what the real I wonder how many Xboxes they've given away.
That sounds like a rash thing to do in San Francisco, because it's very easy to spot which is which, because you can just look at which one has one boxes. But okay.
They even say it in the ad. We came to Google's backyard to challenge Google. And they have if I could find it, they have a Google
but the funny thing
versus
is,
Bing site.
Yesterday's battle, right? The importance of search to Google, of course, is still great, but all the new frontiers are about mobile.
It is interesting that Microsoft is spending so much of its ad dollar and attention on Google, like competing against Google.
Google was very stealth about competing with Microsoft for a long time. I thought Microsoft might just come and squash them, and then at some point they got to the point where they didn't care anymore.
Was it
and
when that, they pulled the EAS server support for Windows Phone that did it?
I think it was a bit before that. I think it was when Android actually took off. You know, the
Android was the thing.
Yeah. I think that the Merrymaker slides is something you should look at. The Merrymaker setup from December that she put out. She's an analyst who does this sort of nice overview of the state of the web with actual data and links back to sources. And the graph that she shows is the Asimco one, which says, what is the dominant operating system? And, you know, it goes back 30 years and it starts out with all this, you know, Apple and Commodore and Atari and stuff. And then it's like, Wintel for the, you know, 15, 20 years.
Right.
And then suddenly it goes, because Apple and Android are taking off. And it's iOS, you know, and it's broken down by manufacturer rather than actual operating system, which makes it a bit of a weird one because it counts iOS and Mac together. But the original Asimco one was like, Microsoft's in trouble. These guys are up to 25%. And her one, she updated for 2012, and it was like, they're up close to 50%. And she says, this quarter, the crossover is happening where the majority of machines on the net are Android rather than Windows. That's happening this quarter.
This quarter?
Yeah.
And that really is all about mobile.
And Apple is still a big chunk of that, too. And it is about mobile because we have mobile devices. We have more mobile devices than we have laptops and desktops now. We're running out of words for this, which is also the other weird thing, because it's not just mobile, it's tablets, too. But mobile versus tablet used to actually mean mobile versus iPad, because iPad was the tablet market until the last half of last year, where suddenly all these Android ones start appearing. And now there are loads and loads of them, but they don't show up in all the stats because they're being used for odd things, and you know, their Kindles and their Nooks and their strange things in China and so on. But there's lots and lots of these showing up too. And the slightly weird bit from my point of view is that from Android, and you know, Android's fragmentation problem has been this sort of thing that people have used against it for 2 years, but actually that hasn't been true. What's happened is, if you write for Android, you learn that, these things can be this big, or they can be this big, they can have lots of pixels, they can have a few pixels. It's like, okay, whatever. I understand there's a domain here. I will write some code that deals with that domain. Whereas on iOS, it's like, well, we've got one that's this big, and we've got three that are this big, and we've got two that are this big, and now we've got one that's this big. On iOS, you either build an iPhone app or you build an iPad app, which means that half the time you've got an iPad app. If you're on an iPad, you download an app and it's got like black bars that take up three quarters of the screen because it's an iPhone app and they've decided not to do anything intelligent about it.
Here, I want to get this printed for my wall. This is Mary Meeker's slide, reimagining of computer operating systems.
That's the one, yeah.
And it goes from 1975 through last year. The big blue thing is Wintel. there is Atari and TRS-80 and Commodore in there. They all disappear.
Is CPM in the other?
Other is probably CPM, sure. CPM, yeah. But really, from 1993 to 2007, it's Wintel and Macintosh. Red is Macintosh, blue is Wintel. Dominant, and that's it. Android appears in 2007 and climbs, as does Apple because of iOS.
Yes.
And now the combination of Android and Apple easily is 63% or so of the total market. Wintel is down to 35%.
Yep.
Huge.
But her other
I think some of this is
that Android becomes 150% now. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lauren.
No, I was just saying, I think some of this is kind of intangible, too. I mean, we're talking about why people feel this way. And I don't know whether you're talking about Microsoft, of course, has a long, long trail behind it. And I don't think it's that easy to, have people forget about that.
Oh, I don't. Do people really have memories? Do they really?
I think the people who are influencers in a lot of this.
Yes,
do.
We do.
Yeah, and they're the ones writing reviews.
Right.
So
that's
so
true.
When for example, Surface, came out right at the beginning, there was sort of a built-in, without addressing, how good or not it really is. I think there was sort of a built-in bias among many people against it simply because it was from Microsoft. I'm not saying that that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think that's just the reality of how the perception is among a lot of the people who write those reviews and look at this initially.
I admit, I have to work hard to overcome my anti-Microsoft bias. But as when you look at graphs like this and you realize they're the underdog, you start to root for things like Windows Phone to give Microsoft some traction in what is clearly the move from desktop to mobile. Really, that's what this measures. And Microsoft just doesn't have a mobile presence.
Well, it's not just mobile, but it's tablets too. That's the other half.
I include tablets as mobile. Yeah, but you're right.
Yeah, that's the thing.
They're used as computers now. Yeah.
This is kind of what I was getting at, which is where the Apple thing has led us astray, because we think of them as distinct, which
right.
is the iPad is something you use sitting on the couch, and the iPhone is something you use during the day. And if you actually look at the usage stats, that's backed up. The iPad has this sort of big spike in the evening when you're sitting at home just looking at reading stuff, because these things are heavy. They're that big, and you basically got to rest it on your leg after a while.
Mary Meeker's next slide actually shows that at 2010 it flipped. If you look at red and blue, red is desktop PCs, blue is laptop PCs, and if you look at green and yellow on this graph, smartphones and tablets. In 2010. Desktop and notebook PCs outpace smartphone and tablets, and every year thereafter, smartphone and tablets have just dominated. In fact, desktop PCs have dropped slightly. It's not even so much that they're losing ground, it's that tablets and smartphones. So this is, it's not that people are giving up their computers, it's the growth of tablets and smartphones is outpacing them.
Yeah, that the PC is not dead.
It's not dead, it's just stagnant.
These articles,
it's stasis.
But the thing is, we're running out of useful discussion subdivisions here. Because
yes.
We keep talking about desktop versus mobile. Well, actually, most of the desktop became laptop a while back.
Right.
And a lot of this is like standing up versus sitting down, one hands versus two hands. There's a bunch of different affordance breakpoints here. One of the big pushes we're doing at Salesforce is about bringing staff to people wherever they happen to be working. So our example is Virgin Atlantic. We want all their employees to be in touch with each other and be in touch with the customers to keep track with what's going on. And there's challenges there because some of them are in the air and aren't actually connected. But the rest of them are sitting in the airport, and they don't have access to connectivity and desktops and keyboards. And there's always the one person there who's sitting there with the keyboard changing the flights, and the rest of them are running around. But they can have phones and they can have tablets in their pockets. And if you actually hook the stuff up to that, suddenly you can connect to all your employees all the time. They don't have to check in with people. And this is this sort of transition we're seeing in business a lot of the time, where it used to be that they had a data entry model that was, there is this one terminal where you keep the business up to date with the statistics, whether it's the cash register or whether it's the thing you have in the back room where you keep track of stuff. Whereas now you can say, I have one of these, or I have something slightly bigger that has a bit more information on it. And you can both read the information of what's going on and update what's happening all the time. And this has crept up on business, because they're used to having these very sort of monolithic systems. And it's coming from the edges where if you look at things like Square, you can have a small business that has a very good handle on what's going on, because every employee has a little reader like that. But it's moving now to such that anyone who's working for a company can keep in touch with everyone else working for that company at the same time, and help them out without all the runaround you had to do before. And that's a huge change.
This is a wonderful deck. I'm going through it. She talks about the reimagining of everything. And but what is very clear, and this, I guess we've seen this so many times in media transitions, if you want to mention Gutenberg Jeff, this would be a good moment to do
it's
so,
great.
Is is that the old media doesn't die. It doesn't. In fact, PCs are still pretty much stasis in terms of number of units in use. It's that there's these new things just take off.
Well, but desktops.
They don't replace it. Desktop. Well, you know, I'll go back to this graph. Desktops, actually, it's pretty holding pretty steady at 750 million desktops in use from, you know, here's the graph. Installed base of desktops in 2009 was about 750 million. It's slightly lower now, maybe 650 million. Notebooks have grown, but not at the expense so much of desktops. It's, and tablets and phones have grown, again, not at the expense of notebooks and desktops. So, and I think that's what you see, right? Is that the old media doesn't go away. It just gets subsumed by the massive growth of this new stuff.
Well, yes, content,
actually, what did go away is the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Content creation. If you're doing writing, you're not going to be doing a lot of writing on a typical tablet.
I guess not.
Or a phone. Well,
there's not more writers, I guess.
Reading, they're not writing.
They're so, more readers.
Yeah.
Well, what I found is that with SwiftKey on here, I can actually type pretty quickly on this. I wouldn't necessarily use.
You wouldn't write a blog post there.
Long form report.
Yeah.
But I can, you know, I can live tweet as quickly on this as I can on the keyboard. I can keep up with stuff like that because the autocomplete works well. The other thing I've seen is that I was at our company offsite last week. And all my colleagues in sales have iPads, but they now all have those little Logitech keyboard things as well. So they pop up the iPad into that if they want to take notes. And they don't carry a laptop as well, which was that, you know, last year they had a laptop in their bag. If they want to take notes, they bring that out. And they had the iPad to keep track of what's going on. And now the iPad has become that. So
yeah, but if you have,
I think
this is
the supposed Surface market, but the Surface has lost it because the iPad is there.
So if you have a Bluetooth, this is the Bluetooth keyboard I use with the Nexus 7 mostly. But if you have a full-size keyboard with a tablet, from a functional standpoint, then you're getting back to a laptop.
I'm going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about wearables because that's the other big thing. Google, of course, has its form of wearable, Google Glass, and then the big report in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and now others, including Bloomberg, are confirming Apple is moving big into an iWatch, could that be? We'll talk about it in just a bit with our panel. Kevin Marks is here from TunnelVision.tv and Salesforce.com, from the City University of New York and the BuzzMachine.com. It's Jeff Jarvis and Lauren Weinstein from Google Plus and Lauren.Vortex.com. We're talking about trends, really. And by the way, if you want to test whether Bing's better than Google, BingItOn.com. Just go there. Do a search. You be the judge. You know, it's so obvious which is which. It seems to me, and I don't know. It's interesting.
Do a search for acetaminophen.
Acetaminophen, is that a good one?
Yeah, because
Google will give you the let's try it. That's good. I like it. Acetaminophen.
See which one does the best.
See who fixes the spelling.
See who fixes the spelling.
Yeah. I guess I got it right.
Does it not show you the cards?
I don't get cards on... Well, Bing is... You know what? This is a Microsoft site. Maybe they're stripping the cards out.
Yeah, that would be a big...
So what they're doing is they're just showing the API results, yeah.
Oh, that sucks. I guess they're saying, oh, if you're... You know, then that would make it very obvious who is whom. Let's do it. They're taking out this stuff on the right, the card.
Yeah. So they're doing a 12 blue links comparison, which is, you know...
That's not a fair.
Slightly dubious when you say that.
We have a collection of antique typewriters here at CUNY, and one of them is called the Bing.
Because when you hit the carriage return, many people don't know this, but ding. We'll be back in just a bit. But first, a word from Squarespace.com. This is blogging for the 21st century, websites for the 21st century, the latest technology on the best hosting together. This makes a great platform for your next website. I want you to visit squarespace.com and try it out. They've got mobile responsive design automatically. That means whenever you put an image on the site, they create 7 different versions. The correct size will load for whatever device you're looking at. One site serves all beautiful templates with 100% drag-and-drop functionality as you customize. But if you're a developer and you want to use CSS or JavaScript, they've got a developer platform, too, with a colored syntax code editor and all of that. It's so easy to build a site and yet so powerful. And, of course, because the software is running on top of the server and they're tightly integrated, you get some real benefits. The servers never go down with the most reliable, and not only just reliable, but also they handle bandwidth very well. So if you suddenly get hit, they've got it automatically so that you get more bandwidth as you need it. You just can't bring a Squarespace site down with traffic. Of course, the software is always updated, always secure. You don't have to worry about that. You can automatically import, sync, and publish to and from social media with a few clicks. Automatically pull photos from Instagram right onto your site, for instance, or instantly sync pages and galleries to Facebook. Auto-publish your new blog entries right to Twitter. Let people know. Social media buttons connecting you with all the services you love. Facebook, Twitter, Google+, yes, Instagram, Foursquare, Dropbox, LinkedIn, Pinterest, StumbleUpon, and on and on and on. Beautiful designs. Great functionality and servers that just never go down. Try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card. Just go to squarespace.com. But if you decide you want to buy, and I wouldn't blame you if you did, look at the pricing. The basic plan, $8 a month when you buy an annual plan. But I think you're going to want to look at the unlimited plan. Now, $16 a month when you buy a year, look what you get. Unlimited pages, galleries, and blogs. Great for a photographer or designer. You can have galleries for every client, for instance. Unlimited bandwidth. You get slash dotted, don't worry about it. You're on Hacker News, no problem. We mentioned you on Twit. You're not going to get a bandwidth bill. You've got unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. And when you buy an annual plan, they'll automatically register a new domain name for you and hook it up to the system for free. Squarespace.com. If you decide to buy, 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, monthly or annual, although the annual plan gets you better savings, when you use our offer code TWIG2, T-W-I-G and the number 2, squarespace.com. I think it was the Times, Nick Bilton writing in the Times, that said it first, then Wall Street Journal immediately piled on. But Bloomberg has a lot more information, including they named some names of executives involved in this new iWatch initiative. And they say Apple has 100 employees working on it. This is more than a prototype, it sounds like.
Yeah, Nick Bilton went off about it was frankly a bit of an odd tangent about how Google is getting close to our eyes, and that's more problematic than being on our wrist. He was a little too psychoanalyzing the world. They're just different things.
Both of them seem like solutions for a problem that doesn't really exist, but maybe that's just because I'm not hip and with it.
But they're very, very different, I think, just because you happen to wear them. Google Glass is going to do a couple of things, right? One is it can record anything in your vision, and two is it delivers information.
Yeah, the watch doesn't do that, obviously.
Right? The watch, it'll give you sound and all kinds of stuff. The watch, it becomes another piece of access to your computer. But to me, where this really goes, I think, is that the watch, in the long run, should be your computer, and everything else communicates with it.
That's what Apple, well, at least that's what Nick said. Apple is thinking of it as a digital hub, not a peripheral.
No, right. That's the key. So that you are always carrying your computer with you. You're wearing your computer.
Wow.
That makes sense to me. And then everything else is peripheral, right? Every screen, every keyboard, everything else becomes peripheral. That makes sense to me as a model. I'm not sure that's where Apple's really going. I don't know. But because I don't know that Apple yet wants to put the entire computer onto your wrist. Because that reduces a lot of value. But if anybody's going to disrupt themselves, it's Apple. So who knows?
Mary Meeker calls it always on. She says, how many of you will be wearing a wearable in 5 years? Is that the next big thing, wearables? Or is this just grasping on the part of Google and Apple trying to find the next big thing?
I can't wait to see you wearing 5 computers, Leo. You'll be wearing them all.
It's funny. I love the idea of carrying a computer in my pocket with my smartphone.
Yeah.
And I think that we've all embraced that. Always connected, always on is really powerful. Always having access to the internet. Is really powerful. I don't know if a watch or glasses, I'm not convinced.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
There's going to be different use cases, right? I mean, there's going to be people for whom it works and people that it won't work for. For the really small wearables, what I always worry about is batteries, right? Because as these things get smaller, if you are going to migrate more of the capability, especially the radio, you know, anything other than short range like Bluetooth, the battery requirements go up and up. So you don't want to end up with a big bulky, you know, thing on your wrist. So a lot of this is kind of waiting for
technology
and battery technology to catch up with what could otherwise be done.
We've been telling that story for years. Battery technology is basically stuck 20 years ago.
Including in Boeing jets and Tesla.
Yeah, apparently. Cars in the cold. Apparently, exploding lithium ions and frozen lithium ions are not a... What about, I mean, is somebody working on kinetic energy as a way of keeping...
I saw Nicholas Negroponte today. There's a lot of really good videos up at solveforx.com for Google's Solve for X conference.
Yeah.
And Nick Negroponte said, you know, he said, no reason. I couldn't be on the phone and say, oh, wait, hold on a second. I'm running out of power. Shake. You were saying? And he said, you can do that right now. Why is anybody doing that?
Because you have to shake really hard for longer than that. Yeah. But I presume that we could get better at that.
Kinetic body heat.
My current mechanical wristwatch never has to be wound. As long as I wear it when I'm walking around, there's enough kinetic energy to keep it going.
Yeah,
that's been around. That technology is ancient.
I also love
the requirements are going to change because as you have a denser radio grid,
you can do low power.
You're going to need to communicate with it is going to go down too. Yeah. So the infrastructure affects what your requirements are also. But that's not going to happen, you know, instantly.
Right. So, do you buy it? Is Apple actually putting 100 people on the job? Is it? Are we going to see a Tim Cook keynote in 6 months? And now we bring you the iWatch.
We haven't seen anything really shocking new in a while from Apple, or for that matter, the Android world. You know, I think it's time for everybody to shock us in the next couple months.
I got a shock for you. Eric Schmidt selling 42% of his stock. Larry and Sergey just facepalmed. It's an all-time high, market cap of $255 billion, shares hitting $775, and Eric Schmidt says, I'm going to sell about 3.2 million shares.
So what do you think? I mean, you know, there's gossip online as to whether or not a divorce is involved, but I think he's going to invest in something or go philanthropic.
Oh, that's interesting. It's worth about $2.5 billion.
He still has another $2.5 billion.
He still has another, yeah, yeah. He sold last shares were sold a year ago. He got $1.5 billion out of that.
See Kevin.
Can you hear me? No, I can't hear you.
I'm not sure why I got muted.
Just fixed it.
We fixed it. We had pushed a button. Sorry about that, Kevin.
Okay.
That's good. I've never had a guest do that. He was holding up a smartphone. You do like Holy Swift Key.
Only Kevin Marks.
What program was that? That was good.
He programmed the whole thing while you were waiting.
He wrote some Java code.
It's some ancient ugly ass app I've got called Flash It, which is designed for communicating with people in bars. So most of the default messages are like beer. Dance!
Hey, baby.
But you can customize them.
Flash it.
Flash it. Dance? I got to get that. That's an Android app worth keeping. Yes, we can hear you now. I'm wasted. That's one of the pre-canned responses.
This is simple messages. This is very tuned at a certain demographic, but I found it useful every now and
I'm
then.
I'm wasted. Wow. What's it called?
It's called Flash It.
I'm getting it.
Somebody has probably written a better one since. I've had this about 3 years. But
hey, it does everything you need, including asking us if we can hear you. So what did you want to say?
I've forgotten now. what were you talking about? There was something interesting.
We were talking about Schmidt selling his stock, but we could go past that to the watch.
And stuff. The wearables. The challenge of digital hub is something that was an Apple strategy from a while ago, which was the presumption was you have all these gadgets and the Mac was the place where you made sense of them.
Right.
And the problem...
They even used the phrase digital hub, as I remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. That was in Steve Keynote's everything. And that was the presumption was you would like one place to manage all these gadgets from. And that was when iTunes was the you know, would actually work with everything. It wouldn't just work with Apple devices. You could work use it with any phone and MP3 player and so on. And they that constrained them a bit too long, and they were stuck with this iTunes at the center of everything thing to the point where people got cross with it, because you had to use plug your iPhone into iTunes to actually move things around. And they realized that doing that through the web was better eventually, after Google sort of showed them that you might want to do this. But they're still wrestling with the iCloud as the center of things.
Right.
And I think what we're moving towards is not, I have this thing on my wrist that is my universe, but I have this thing on my wrist which is one copy of the stuff that matters to me, but actually things...
Or is it just your identity, Kevin? Kevin, is it just your identity? What you're saying is you don't need a processor.
You don't need a processor as much.
Right.
You know, you don't need to have. Also, you don't need a data store there. You don't actually want your entire data store to be something on your wrist that you can fall into a swimming pool and lose. You know, the problem. This is the same problem as like phone as second factor ID, which is we'll send you a message to your phone to confirm that that's what you meant on your computer. Well, that works until you drop the phone in the toilet, or it works until you're confirming purchase on your phone and you need to buy a new phone. You know, there's structural problems with it, and actually people lose their phones a hell of a lot more than you would think, given that people are using them as a second factor of authentication. But I think once you've got, you know, there's like zero, one, many thing going on here. And we're doing the from the one to the many part, where and Google has this with Chrome and with Gmail and lots of the things. If I get a notification from Gmail and I read it, it's marked red on every other Google device I have. If I get a notification from Twitter, and then I go to any one of my other devices, I've still got that notification from Twitter, because they're not actually having a shared red flag between them. If I browse to something in Chrome, any other Chrome browser I'm using on any machine will have that history and I can click through to it. Whereas if I'm on iOS, every app has its own browser history in it. If I click through a link on Twitter on the iPad, it's in the Twitter browser history, it's not in the main browser history, and it's not in the Facebook browser history, and it's not in the Foursquare browser history. It's in that, you know, it's, you have to remember how I got there to find that same thing again. So I think that is the tension that's being going on here. And it's kind of the pocket versus the cloud, but it's making sense of both of those things at once. And that's the sort of affordance we're working towards with these.
But is the screen big enough so you could show it across a bar on the iWatch? That's what I want to know. I have downloaded, you know, it turns out there's three of, I'm sorry, you were saying something really deep and profound, but I'm busy playing with Flash It. There's Love, there's Bar, there's three different Flash Its.
Oh, there are now.
Oh, they've got a whole...
Flash It
ecosystem.
There's a whole Flash ecosystem. There's Love Flash It, Bar Flash It, and then what's the third one? Podcast Flash It. No, I don't know. I can't find the other one. But anyway, this is
Christian Flash It. There's Christian Flash It.
Is there really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Jesus loves you.
Amen.
Luke 7:19.
There was something about the having data on your wrist, having all your data on the wrist that I think is important here, which is, you know, you don't want to lose all your data if you drop your wristwatch into the toilet, obviously.
But we do that all the time.
And people do that all the time.
Yeah.
But the other reason you don't necessarily want to have all the data on your wrist is the way laws have been going, at least here in the U.S.
Police can just take it.
They can just, you know, sometimes without a warrant, they just take the thing off your wrist. And if all your data is there, they can, you think you've got encryption on it, but it's probably weak encryption. They can just dump it all. If it's in the cloud, the laws are not optimum, and there's problems with those too, but it makes it more complicated for them than just to be able to take, you know, if you have your whole life's worth of data right there on your body that they can just physically grab. So that's something to keep in mind.
I do think, Lauren, we have demonstrated effectively, though, that nobody really cares anymore about privacy or any of this stuff, and we're just all full speed ahead. Give me the convenience, and I'm going to put it on my wrist, and I don't care. The day will come at some point, I guess, where we put stuff in safes and say, our data is, you know, locked up.
Well, it really comes to a matter of legal rights. You know, you got CISPA coming back after SOPA PIPA. And we have the fear. It's got to be on the level of principles to say that you have privacy, you have in your data and in your email. And I keep on saying government keeps acting like it's the protector of privacy. It is the worst threat to privacy.
Yeah.
It's the same thing going on in the EU. I mean, you constantly have governments that are saying, well, they, you know, for example, you have the EU that went through this whole rigmarole for cookies, right? They had all their sites with these big banners saying, you know, do you accept our cookie policy? And now that's all falling apart because in the process of doing that, they broke so many sites. But these same governments at the same time are pushing all these government data retention systems and tapping of communications and all the rest now. So they're very hypocritical. So like Jeff is saying, you know, if you're believing that government is going to protect your privacy rights or other rights in this context, you're going down the garden path because they're the first ones that are going to be going after it.
Speaking of Fox News headlines.
So have you read Cory Doctorow's new novel Homeland yet?
No, I got it on my desk. Is it good?
Yes, it's very good.
It's the sequel to A Little Brother.
Yes.
Yeah, which is great.
But it covers a lot of these like cybersecurity things and people surveilling you and quadcopters and the cops, and it's well done.
When Dick Cheney says I approve of President Obama's drone program, then we know we got problems. If you ask me. Shimony Christmas. I just got this. We got to. But now, is this a young adult or?
Yeah.
Because Little Brother was for young adults.
It's a sequel, Little Brother. It's the same characters. It's set in San Francisco and Burning Man, and it's, you know, it's sort of explaining the nerd world of San Francisco to young kids across America, which is a great thing to do.
It's the 60s all over again.
I just bought the wrong Flash It.
September? That's lousy.
It's flashcards. I'm wearing French jumpers.
That's boring, Flash It.
$1.09.
Yeah, no, these are all free. These are all free.
Well, I learned that the hard way.
What does this mean? Does this mean something?
Yeah, it means I love you.
That means I love you?
Yeah, I forget how you get there, but it's a Howard Stern. I know I learned that from Howard Stern show.
It's probably dirty.
No, it's like whatever letters of the alphabet, or I don't know what it is.
What? That's another thing from the Howard Stern show.
You are sexy? No, I don't. These are fun. These are good. Another Fox News headline. Google is building its own airport. Actually, this is one of those classic news journalism headlines.
They have their own airport already. They got the NASA runway.
Yeah, that's basically it. So.
No, it's going to be down in San Jose. It's different. Close to you. It's going to be flying over you, Kevin.
It's an $82 million facility in San Jose.
We've got an airport in San Jose.
So they're going to have like a terminal at San Jose Airport?
Well, no, it's going to be a private aviation. They're upgrading, and others will be able to use it too.
Between the three of them, between Larry, Sergey, and Eric, they have eight jets. Eight jets. Jeez. And that doesn't include Google's corporate fleet. That's their personal property.
What if they'll let Marissa use it?
The problem is that there's been some.
Well, on the other side of NASA.
Well, they were using NASA Ames or Moffett Field, I guess, and they're Congressman Grassley and others have said, they're only paying $3.7 million a year. This isn't right. So Google says, all right, fine. We're gonna build our own. 29 acres. Each private plane would be a property tax generator, says San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed. The proposed Google port will include its own executive terminal, multiple hangars, ramp space, aircraft parking lot, retail shops.
So you're building Terminal D or Terminal G, I suppose, at San Jose.
It's like building a new terminal.
So I like San Jose Airport. I live in San Jose.
It's your airport.
I get there quickly. But also, is this like little airport? So you go through the terminal. The terminal is like 30 meters deep or something. You go in, you go out the other side, you go out on the runway, and you walk up a staircase to a plane. It feels like you're back in the jet age.
It's the old joke that you have one gate but you change the sign.
it's actually quite a nice airport now.
Did anybody watch President Obama's fireside hangout? Man, this is like...
No, it's on tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow.
Yeah. Today, Leo, the big hangout.
It's the interns.
the internship. And I put it on the bottom of the.
Hasn't Howard Stern done that? An intern hangout.
That's a would be a different kind.
Well, they did. The great thing was they revealed the intern trailer on Google Plus today, and then tomorrow, as a following act, the president does a hangout.
That's
I put the link to the trailer since it is Google related on the rundown.
Google's got to love this.
Oh yeah,
I mean, is this good for them?
Well, they did one already, right?
Yeah, he's done Obama. You know,
oh, it's not the first one. He did one earlier. Yeah.
He did it Facebook too, Mark Interpreter.
Yeah, but I don't know, you know. Okay, let's look at the intern. Here's a direct link on YouTube. The internship trip. This is what, to be an intern at the White House?
I know, at Google.
Oh, at Google. Oh, this is the movie.
It's Google related. This is the movie.
With Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson.
Yes.
Ah, okay, let's skip the
it today.
The ad.
2 o'clock.
I love it how they put ads on ads now.
Yes. Well, it was so meta because they did a hangout saying they were going to do the hangout.
So this was the movie that they shot at the Googleplex.
I'm going to crush this course and not get psyched out of your mind. I'm gonna hunt some
bags. But they're adults that have...
The Chrono Shock 13.
They didn't tell you, did they? Your company is closed.
You closed the company?
Everything's computerized.
John Goodman.
Now, people have a deep mistrust.
You know, this is ironic. They're trying to sell a wristwatch.
It's funny.
And the company went out of business because everything's computerized now. Hey, Hollywood knows.
Or two, mm-hmm. Or three, or four.
All of them.
This summer.
Vic,
Google.
I got it. Google. You got us a job at Google?
Not a job. It's an interview for an internship that could lead to a job. Nick, this might be the last chance that we got.
Come in here. You got to come in closer. Yeah. They won't be able to see us. See how small the webcam is?
They're doing a hangout.
We can see you guys.
Okay, good. Great. You got it.
Hi, my name is Billy.
We can hear you fine as well.
Oh, great.
Oh, boy.
Welcome to Google. This will not be your average internship.
We're looking at some sort of mental hunger games against a bunch of genius kids for just like a handful of jobs.
That's a Sharpie, by the way, genius.
That's my fault.
Hey, yo, it's time to get the party.
I'm Lyle, one of the team
This looks
managers.
Awful.
Pound me.
Yeah.
Oh, normally just putting the fist out without the words is all that's necessary.
Come on, bro. Fist me. Get up in there.
Yeah, that's definitely not right.
This is terrible.
Interns? Yeah. Shut up.
Deal with it.
You're so old, though. I thought you were important.
Sometimes the long shots pay off the biggest.
Our team's a joke.
You guys got to start believing.
This reminds me of a little girl from a steel town who had the dream to dance.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to ever go see this movie. This looks like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
I think we're required to go see
it. I have one of those hats.
Do you? The Google beanie? It's a Noogler's hat, right?
Yes. No. I want to go there and work for one day so I can get one.
Yeah, I'd love to have a Noogler hat. It says Noogler on it, right?
It does, yes.
Yeah. And they made even you, an adult, wear it?
They make you. It's a, you know, it's an
You want
thing.
To. You're glad to.
It's... Google is based on going to Stanford. You know, that's what it's like. It's
right.
It has a U.S. university feel to it because that's all that the founders know.
But it's Microsoft did the same thing, and I think it's partly to attract college age kids to make them feel at home.
So this was part of the, you know, when I was recruited to Google, there was that, you know, it's like, hi, do you realize how old I am? So I kind of get some of that joke because their recruiting process is tuned, was then
kids.
Tuned for people who were coming out of university with a computer science degree. And you're saying, well, I have been doing this for 20 years. No, I don't have a computer science degree. And I've had friends who were called in for interview and were like, really? You're making me do this?
Did you have to solve a Rubik's Cube?
I did not have no, but they, you know, they say, you know, here's some, write some code on the whiteboard and do this, you know. They've tuned the process a bit since then, so they're actually able to recruit people who have, you know, done stuff before. But there's fairly well documented stuff of this going wrong previously. So I can see the joke, and I can see that the Googlers would get the joke and find it amusing too. But it's also, you know, every time your culture gets focused on by mass media, you realize, wow, they got that really wrong, but they must be getting everything else right. You know, this is the running joke with mass media, is that they trivialize everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, I'm over that. There was all this outcry about Bravo startup Silicon Valley. And for me,
that was horrible.
It was horrible, but If it gets somebody somewhere else to consider a career in tech, I'm happy with that.
So
that,
so you think this is a good advertisement for the for STEM?
I take it as a marker that this weird shit we've been doing for a long time is now becoming mainstream.
It's mainstream. It is mainstream. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a show.
And you know,
too bad it's not funny. It would be nice if it were a better script.
But that's, you know, this was the frustrating, that was the thing that frustrated me about the Social Network movie. I mean, that was a marker for it going mainstream, but it was also such a, you know, weird macho bro bullshit movie that, you know, all the women were hookers or
The Social Network. Yeah.
So there was,
it's horrible. You
know, there was, but that was a framing narrative for the, for, you know, a couple of years worth of people who come to San Francisco to do startups. So I like Startup Silicon Valley as counterbalance to that, because it means we may actually get some women who are interested in fashion coming here and trying to do startups, because they're, that's the demographic that Bravo appeals to. And they found people who would fit in with the Bravo worldview. I'm not necessarily saying it was a great success or a great representation of Silicon Valley, but it was, it's encouraging to see different narratives around technology and technology going to the mainstream thing. The show that's actually optimism. Good at this is The Good Wife.
I hear that's very good.
Very sharp script team there. Yep. They actually pick on real issues, and because it's a courtroom drama, they can have extended discussions of it. So right. That structurally, that one's quite good. But that was the one of the things I was at this week was the Patent Office roundtable at Stanford yesterday, where the patent trademark officers came here to say, okay, we hear that some of you are not that happy with software patents. Do you want to come and talk about this? And that was interesting to me. In that, I think they're feeling mainstream cultural pressure, because This American Life did an episode on how bad patents are. You know, it's become a sort of a trope in the TV series of the law firm TV series. There's a bunch of them.
I hope that's the case. I hope you're right.
Patent lawsuits are a way of ripping people off. You know, I think there was a Good Wife episode, and I think there might have been one in. Suits as well.
People are becoming aware of it. Here's a link to a request for comments and notice of roundtable events for partnership for enhancement of quality of software related patents. Let's just get rid of them.
Don't improve them, right. Kill them.
Get rid of them.
But that's, you know, this is that was the interesting thing was the people who were speaking were most of them were lawyers, but it was a mixture of
this was yesterday.
Very, very, you know, nerdy people speaking as well. They had EFF people.
Good.
They had the Developers Alliance guy who was really good, who basically said, he stood up, this was organized after the Lodsys patent went after all the iOS developers.
Yep.
And he said, when I represent these people who are building applications, and their view of patents is entirely negative. And if you can't reach those people, you're clearly doing it wrong. And then another guy stood up and said, from our point of view as developers, a patent is the last place we'd go and look for technology. We have plenty of places to look for I want to build something, and has someone done this before? And the patent office is absolutely not on our radar. So clearly you're not, you know, fulfilling the purpose you were set up for, which was to disseminate technology. So that was fairly hard truths for the patent people. And then the EFF stood up, Judy Samuels, who's great. She's now the Cuban chair of getting rid of stupid patents.
And that's the actual title, by the way.
She's got business cards with that on her. Yeah. She Instagrammed them yesterday.
Yeah.
So she stood up and said, if you're going to get a software patent, you need to put code in your patent, and then we can have a discussion about whether that's patentable or not.
Right.
But as long as it's big, fluffy ideas and then some random example, and then you sue people on the basis of the idea, you're doing it wrong. And the patent office is doing it wrong to allow that.
But do they understand what a huge cost this is? It's a tax on innovation. It makes small business people reluctant to do things, makes people keep people out of the technology business as entrepreneurs, just because the risk is so high, it's inevitable that you will get sued by somebody.
They're starting to get that. That was the, you know, there's another one of these roundtables in New York on the 27th, I think it's on that page. And they're also asking for written submissions. So there's a link there to say, email us and tell us what your submissions are. So I'd encourage anyone watching Twig to contact the patent office and explain why this is a bad idea. Because, mm-hmm. their problem is that they're public servants. They don't want to destroy the economy. They've just, done it by accident. They're trying to work out how to fix this. They don't necessarily have the ability to change the law at a stroke like Congress does, but they want to understand what they've been doing wrong and improve that. And if you can give them evidence of that and explain that to them, that will help them change their procedures.
I'll be glad to. It might be too late for us, but one of the things here is that
let's face it, the techies traditionally have not really been interested in participating in the legal side of this and the political side of this. So by default, we've handed all the marbles to the side that has traditionally controlled this area. So until we have people wandering around in the halls of Congress, grabbing people by the lapel and saying, "Hey, this is our side of this," this is what we would expect to have happen. Now that's gradually starting to change, but up until now, it's been so lopsided and so skewed that it's completely understandable how we've ended up with patents being just an enormous disaster for software and also in business method patents also are a similar kind of problem.
Right, from my point of view is. I went back and looked at this. The history of patents is patents were came out of a law that was passed by King James. King James, the first of England, who of King James Bible fame, his parliament passed a law abolishing monopolies because Henry VIII and Elizabeth and him had been issuing too many of them to their friends and they wanted to stop this happening. But they wrote a loophole, which is, well, if you've actually invented something, you can have a monopoly for 14 years as long as it doesn't disturb trade too much. They had some well-written clauses around it because they realized this was a problem and they've written a law to abolish monopolies. And at some point somebody said, but there could, there's some good to this, and patents grow out of that loophole. And each time, over time, that monopoly keeps growing again, you need one of these monopolies acts to throw them away. And we had that with the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Copyright.
Yeah, but if you actually look at it, these things grow up. And they actually expand when companies are in decline because they start looking for ways to fight other people off. They start looking at the world as a zero-sum game rather than a growth game. In the growth game, you don't need the patent because things are going so well, you're busy selling things to people and making more. But once you come to this point where, oh, wait a minute, we need to stop other people catching up with us, when you're on the other end of the innovation and everything, that's when you start filing patents. And that's why IBM and Kodak have all the patents.
But of course, if you're going to get these occasional adjustments, to bring the patent system back into line with something a little closer to what the original idea was, you have to have a functioning political system to start with. And,
right.
When we can't even agree on basic issues in Congress right now, trying to push things that involve highly technical areas and patents and things is going to be a really tough pull because
huge,
you just can't get, anyone's,
you're right.
can't get anyone's attention and you need a lot of money just to get in front of their faces.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything. Yeah, no, don't say anything. I understand. But the thing for me is that we have built alternative structures. So the goal of the patent system, as after the monopoly thing was done, The US version of this was, well, this is to get you to disclose your invention so that after you've had your limited monopoly, other people can use it too.
Right.
Well, guess what?
Right.
We fixed that. In the software field, we have GitHub, we have the IETF, the W3C, we have all these standards bodies that publish how to do stuff, and you can search that and find it. So if you're going to start a project now, the first thing you do is not, I will write some code from scratch. It's, I will go and Google some keywords and see what code exists. I'll go and search GitHub and see how much I can build out of existing things. So if I want to set up something, I will go and find some infrastructure and reuse that and build on all that stuff. And then at some point, it's like, okay, now the bit that I wanted to do was this clever thing combining these two things. I don't have to build it all from scratch. So we have a beautiful functioning system that shares inventions independently between companies. If you want a concrete example, just look at the web on your phone. If you're doing that, you're running WebKit to a first approximation, unless you work for Microsoft and have a Microsoft phone. And you are running software that was started by Apple, is now contributed by Google, by Nokia, by everyone who's building phones. Even Opera today just picked up WebKit. You have an open source project that all these companies who are suing each other and fighting competing in the market are actually cooperating on. And
so, Kevin, go to Lauren's point, right? So you know, we get the sense of this. Even if you convince the patent office people of this, it's still going to come down to courts and legislation, and that's where the big money is still going to come in, right? Is there any hope of changing this?
The fact that you're using shared code or something doesn't mean you're not going to get sued. All you may be doing in some cases is buying your way into being sued along with the people that wrote the source code you're now using.
Right. So the point is, when I had a patent lawsuit 91, this was kind of hard to say, but there's a better way of doing this. It is no longer hard to say that. We have this massive existence proof is that we have a better way of doing this knowledge sharing because this is how we actually run the computer business now. The guy from the Business Software Alliance stood up and gave his sort of, yes, patents are wonderful speech, and he had a little slide up that was a grid of logos. And I looked at the logos, it's like, do you realize that none of the companies in the Business Software Alliance were founded this century? You know, if it was this sort of iconic example of this is a thing that big old companies do to fend off competition, whereas the smart new companies aren't doing this. The thing is that those are the companies that have a fair bit of money and they can lobby now and they can explain this. But also culturally, we can explain this narrative because when you say to something, so that phone you're using, do you realize that that's an open source operating system, that that's an open source browser? That is something that this is now the infrastructure of what we use every day. It is no longer this corner thing that was, you know, Linux, which was only used on servers, and you said, oh yeah, you're using open source when you use Google, but it was, you know, you can now say you're using open source when you use your Android, you're using open source when you use your iPad, you're using open source with pretty much everything you touch now.
See, I don't think the trolls really care. I mean, when you're talking about some of the big companies going after each other is one thing, but the trolls don't care. They just go after everybody and they'll get enough out of it.
So we need to stop enabling the trolls. The problem is that the way the patent system is set up at the moment, because the cost of litigation is so high, you can get a BS patent and then go and threaten people without even filing lawsuits and extort money from them because the cost of going to be so high.
We're looking at $1.5 to $3 million.
Right. So for the troll, they don't want to go to court either, but they're a bunch of lawyers. Lawyers are cheap at the moment.
It's also cheap for them to file multiple lawsuits because when they file one or 50, it's roughly the same cost. So what they do is they file massive numbers of lawsuits.
So what we need is the courts to, I mean, the first step is, and we've seen a few cases of this where the courts have called BS.
Yes. Well, we're starting to see that. But the first thing we need is the cultural understanding, the realization that this is going on and it is exploitation. So that's where the media staff, This American Life, you know, stuff on TV, when that is the narrative, that's good. You know, then you need to have court decisions, and then you need to say, okay, patent office, you can do these things with regulations. Congress, you can do these things by passing new laws. It will make you popular. Remember that SOPA thing? All those people would love you if you did this. You know, we can make this stuff happen, but it is this political thing of explaining that the consensus has changed and making that clear to people. So
that is assuming a level of rationality, you know, in the way Congress addresses technology issues, and I'm not sure that's really a good bet.
It's emotionality. It's not necessarily rationality. It's them understanding that they look bad when they do this. Politicians are good at that. That's why they get elected. They're good at understanding when people.
I love Kevin's optimism today. He also said that that the Bravo series was going to bring more women into programming. Give me those glasses he's wearing. Because you're out in the sun.
There is one happy story, and that's the Newegg story. They were sued for the shopping cart patent. And by the way, this company that sued had already received quite a bit of money from other companies, including Amazon, Home Depot, Nordstrom, Macy's, Radio Shack, Kohl's, and Newegg decided they were going to fight, and they won. But, you know, I think – I don't know if they would ever recover their costs of fighting either. I mean,
we had the same thing with Eolus. So the Eolus patent was a patent on browser plugins.
Yeah, terrible patent.
And Microsoft paid them off.
Yep. It was cheaper to pay them off regardless of the merit of the patent.
And then last year, halfway through last year, somebody fought it. Tim Berners-Lee went out to Texas and stood up in court and said this thing was completely obvious at the time they filed the patent because of these other six things, and the jury decided. So, you know, the other half of this is explaining to the people of Texas that they are being used by these companies to rip people off, and that may involve going to Texas to testify and filing some test cases, but also applying the media pressure that, you know, Texas is being messed with or something. I'm not an expert on Texan psychology.
Yeah, these are mostly in East Texas, these lawsuits, and a lot of these patent trolls have dummy offices in Beaumont, Texas. Just doors with signs on them, nobody behind it. And the reason I've been told is there are a number of reasons, but one is because they fast track these lawsuits, but the other is because juries seem to be very pro.
There's a classic patent narrative, which is little guy against big corporation. And if you're doing a patent troll lawsuit, that's what you say.
Right.
You know, even the Wall Street Journal wrote a thing about this week, and it said something like IBM and small companies are against big companies like Microsoft and Google on this. And it's like, no, those aren't small companies.
IBM, small company. Yeah.
Well, IBM is because they have a big hoard of patents. They don't care. But also it was like, and these small businesses, it's like, they're not small businesses. They are shell companies set up by lawyers to exploit these loopholes.
They're not businesses at all, except in the sense that they make money.
So it's constructing the counter narrative that isn't small inventor against large company, but exploitative lawyers ripping off businesses, which is, you know, it's the same narrative, just a question of who's the hero and who's the villain.
Yeah.
Did you see the Wi-Fi one today? Speaking of trolls,
no.
Trolls. I guess it was Cisco was trying to get Rico against a troll that's been suing hotels and motels for providing Wi-Fi.
Rico's the racketeering
Wi-Fi, by the way.
Racketeering.
And the idea was, and what they've been doing is it's kind of different than what a lot of trolls do. They're going for very small payouts comparatively, like $4,000 or $5,000 per site, but they're going after many, many, many sites. And the idea was that they could go after them, you know, using RICO, and maybe that would be a good way to stop it. And I guess a judge just
failed
or yesterday threw that out.
Yeah.
Said you can't use RICO. Now that the case moves forward, but it just goes to show when they asked the trolls about this and said, well, why are you going to go after homeowners using Wi-Fi? Their response was not yet. So you know, there's a whole world, a whole universe of ways for these guys to go forward unless there's fundamental change. And I don't really see how you get the fundamental change given the kind of structure we have now. I mean, it's nice to say, yeah, if this becomes part of popular culture and it's on TV and such, that's going to influence congressmen. But when you come right down to it, they're more influenced by who has the most money at any given moment to give to their campaign.
But there is a counter narrative, which is the intermittent windshield wiper narrative, where a big company steals idea from little guy and gets away with it, and little guy sues and wins. And that is the counter narrative, which is still quite successful. In fact, I'm looking at an article about the judge siding with the Wi-Fi patent troll over Cisco. The first comment is, big invention-stealing companies have done a very good job of spreading the troll myth in order to cover the fact they're stealing on a grand scale. There is that belief that's what's going on.
And that motivates Cisco now. This is where, Lauren, you might have some hope. That when the big companies start getting hurt and they do have the money and they go in and say, enough of this, we've got to change the law, that when those interests become aligned with open innovators and big companies to go together to Congress, that's when you might get something.
Yeah, and I think that's why the Newegg thing was so encouraging also. They went after that very basic patent, even though they knew most likely they'd never recoup their costs, but they said, you know, hell, we're going to do it anyway. If we saw more of that from companies that had the resources and the gravitas to do it, we might actually get somewhere.
Meanwhile, a lot of smaller businesses like ours will be put out of business. In the interim, we were wrong. We were talking about the Chromebook Pixel. Remember that last week?
Well, now another report. Yeah,
is it real or not?
I don't know. Another report came and said that there was some documentation found somewhere. I don't know.
I think the video was made by a company called Slinky.me. Which, had I known, I might have been less likely to play it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I still want one.
It was the idea was it was a touchscreen Chromebook with Retina Plus resolution.
It's the touchscreen bit that's got that makes me suspicious, because that stuff isn't there on Chrome.
Yeah. Just because you make a the point being, just because you made a video on YouTube doesn't make it true. We're going to take a break. We're going to get our tool, a tip, a number. And Lauren, if you want to give us maybe a suggestion for something people should think about, know about, you know, just a tip. We'll do that after the break. But first, a little word from LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm. LegalZoom is provides self-help services to get you the legal documents you need for your business or your family, LLC. This, you know, you don't need to go get a big law firm to do an LLC or a trademark or a patent, for that matter. A lot of this you can just do by yourself, step by step, at the LegalZoom website. Should you feel like you got a question, you want to know more, they also even have an extensive network of attorneys. They call it the LegalZoom Legal Plan in most states. And online, you can search online profiles and unedited customer reviews, so you can really get a sense of, you know, is this somebody I want to ask a question? The fees are set. And LegalZoom is very affordable, $99 to form a business or an LLC to incorporate, $69 to do a will or a living trust. And if you've got a blog, you know, you really ought to think about trademarking your blog name, protecting yourself. It's easy and effective and simple. LegalZoom.com. And we want you to use the offer code TWIG so that they know that you heard about it on This Week in Google. And as a way of thanking you, we'll give you $10 off your visit if you use the offer code TWIG when you sign up for some legal services at LegalZoom.com. Kevin Marks just jumped up and the table fell over. I need a... special message here for Kevin. Let's see. Let's try that. Can he? Oh, his umbrella fell over, it looks like. Wow. 143, Kevin. 143.
Sorry, the sun had moved, so I was moving my umbrella.
That's quite all right. Thank you for supporting the show. LegalZoom.com for more information. LegalZoom.com. And if you decide to buy, $10 off when you use the offer code This Week in Google. TWIG, actually, is all you need. Normally, Gina Trapani would give us a tip, but you've already given us a tool, Kevin Marks. I can't thank you enough. Flash It, the Bar, the Love, and then there's a third one, which I can't remember. Didn't download it, I guess. Anything else you'd like to mention? A tool, a tip, an idea?
There's an idea that I just stuck in the chat room, which is... It goes along with the WebRTC thing. It's like suddenly the browser is getting control to do interesting things.
Yeah.
And it's a technology proof, which is you click on this thing, it turns on your camera, it sees how far away your eyes are, and it makes the text bigger if you're too far away.
Ooh. And because it would be far too much trouble to hit Command Plus.
Well, no, see how old my eyes are and thus make the text.
All right, so here we go. So this is...
So do it on your Chromebook.
Oh, if I did it in Chrome, would that be good enough?
Chrome would work, yeah.
All right, so I don't have a Chromebook, but I have a computer. Let me load Chrome here.
Yeah, and then it says, I can see your eyes.
Oh, look, it sees Chad, and it's making it much bigger because...
If you lean in...
Whoa!
If you lean in, it gets smaller.
That is pretty funny.
So the thing is, you know, it's kind of a joke, but this is actually an important problem. So this comes down to the problem of design for phones and tablets, which is that... The CSS pixel is designed to be an angular measure of, with an assumption that the screen is 28 inches away from you, because it was designed, the spec was written when we were using laptops.
Right.
But the thing is, I've now got something like this, which I normally hold here because I've got, you know, a good near point. And for that, I can read quite small type on that. And
this works really well. Screen.
Whereas I've got an iPad, which I hold a bit further away. And if your eyesight's going, one of the advantages of the iPad is you're holding it at that length that you read a newspaper. I was beating on Apple for having just two sizes before, but that was because they'd sort of hit these two sweet spots, which is I'm either holding something here and glancing at it, or I'm holding it here and I'm reading it. But what you really want is this, and they all have cameras in. You could do this. You could build this into the browser such that, I'm reading this here. I'm glancing at it from a distance. Give me the big version. I'm looking at it over there. Give me that. Oh, I'm looking at the TV screen. I'm 15 feet away from it. make the type really big, please. You know, that is an actually a useful use case. And it's about the using a bit of insight from the machine to understand what you're trying to do. So this is a sort of a precursor of how this stuff is likely to go, and it comes in with the wearableness. And it'll be, you know, it'll be true for the, you know, I've got a little tiny screen here. It'll right. better make the type right for me looking at it at infinity. And, you know, it's not going to work.
You can't recognize your face when it's on your face. That's the only problem.
Samsung, right. Some of Samsung's phones start to do that. With they at least look for face detection, and then if you're looking at the phone, they don't turn the screen off, things like that. So we're almost there. We're getting to that point. I like this idea. You don't want it to do too much because you don't want the size of the font.
No. I mean, it's more of an example of, you know, you don't actually want it swishing around all
right.
the time.
Right.
But, you know, you could do it at the point when you open the page and you're running your queries. It's like, okay, how big is this screen and what's going on? Doing it at that point would be useful. So you can just get some sense of which domain you're in. Yep. And if you actually look at when you build responsive sites now, you have breakpoints. You say it's either this wide or it's this wide or it's this wide. But you're doing it on width. You're not doing it on... And you've got width, and then you've got this multiplier, which is the pixel ratio, which is hidden from you by the browser and is usually quantized to 1 or 2 because that's, you know, there's an assumption of you are this far away. In effect, those settings are telling you how far away to hold the particular screen.
I like this.
Whereas we can actually reverse this and measure it. So I think that was a cute demo. And the other link that I'm saying you should go to is eff.org/patent. Because when we're talking about the software patent stuff, that's a discussion of this, and it has a bunch of calls of action and things you can do there.
Please do. It's funny that Mark Cuban is behind this. And then you have on the other side Nathan Myhrvold, the Microsoft billionaire, who's decided he decided, hey, I'm going to go out and become a patent troll.
Somebody hypnotize him?
I don't know why.
This was the same Mark Cuban who had originally said that P2P should be completely outlawed.
Yeah, Cuba's an interesting case. It's interesting that he donated money to do this or to fund this seat, this chair.
Yeah, and Notch did. Notch of Minecraft fame.
And Notch. Good for Notch. Yeah. Good argument about why patent trolling is bad. EFF.org/patent. And there's also information there about how you can get involved.
And I've also built a site called fixpatents.org, but I haven't actually finished building it yet.
Oh, so good.
Oh,
Kevin, I'm right on.
Campaigning.
And right on. The hashtag fixpatents is a good hashtag.
Fixpatents, please, everybody. Lauren, is there anything you'd like to share with us? Lauren's blog is lauren.vortex.com.
Yeah, well, I think... one thing would be an Android app that I use pretty much constantly now. So there's something to actually be useful that I can impart here. And that would be, it's called Moon Plus Reader Pro. And that's become my go-to.
It's really good.
Oh, I don't know it. Oh, I'm downloading it.
For really good. Typical formats like EPUB and FB2 and those. And the pro version of it has really nice PDF integration in it, very fast. And it uses the same user interface that the rest of it uses. Now, they had a problem recently, which was some company in Russia, talking about trolls, complained about that they claimed that they had a pirate link in them somewhere in their network library. So they actually got pulled from Google Play briefly, and they were very upset about that, as we all would be. But they came back now. They're back on. So they're having a 50% sale. So it's like $249 right now. And that's really what I use. Doesn't a day go by that I'm not using that extensively. And so when you're not using the Google Play for the books that are in that domain, for everything else that you're using in terms of ebooks, that's not DRM'd. I really like the Moon Plus Reader Pro, and they have a free version too that saves you the $249. But I'd say support the developers whenever you can.
Search for Reader Pro. You think I'm having a hard time finding it with Moon?
Moon Plus. You have a Moon
just
Plus?
Moon PLUS or
it's Moon Plus sign.
Moon Plus Reader. Sign.
Yeah, it's oddly the Play Store search is not very good. It doesn't do. Did you mean?
Yeah, it's not finding it.
Huh.
Well, only because it sucks.
Lauren's right. It is very good. I had problems doing an EPUB, and I went through about 10 different apps trying to get it to work, and finally got that to work. And then found that using PDFs within it is really
I should
really
just
good.
Do it on the web. I keep forgetting I can install from the browser, and it's so much easier than trying to do it on the.
Well, plus, when you want to install it in the 25 phones you own.
Right. Yeah, I could install it. I wish there were an install on all phones button.
I wish there were too. I also wish there were a function that says when I get a new phone, just go ahead and move everything from this phone to this.
You can kind of do that.
Can how?
Well, it's supposed to do that. I use AppBrain sometimes to do that. Can't you get a list of the apps you have installed? I think you can somewhere.
Well, you can't. You've got to do one at a time.
You still have to do it one at a time. That stinks.
Titanium, if you're rooted.
Titanium's great, yeah.
If you're rooted, you have more ways to do this. Titanium, if you're rooted, is really good. You can basically pick up everything and dump it to another phone. That won't always work the way you might want, but it's a lot better than
it'll take settings, too, and save games and stuff like that, yeah. That's Titanium Backup Plus. Another great tip.
Yeah.
And I'm downloading Moon Plus Reader Pro. Our number of the week, Jeff.
Number of the week, I got a few. I'm going to start here with BitShare. Has a nice, data viz thing. Data never sleeps. How much happens in 1 minute on net? But it's a great compilation, right? 1 minute, you know this one. 48 hours of new video on YouTube. 204 million emails sent.
Wow.
2 million search queries on Google. 648,000 shares on Facebook. We spend 272,000 on e-commerce. God knows how much this is real or not, but it's really kind of nice to have a sense of this idea of, I mentioned earlier in that Wired piece, the idea of the stream versus the library. And it's really good. But I have to give you another number, Leo, just for you. 143 means I love you because there's one letter in I, four letters in love, and three in you.
There's also, that could also be, I hate you.
You've got to look at the negative side of it. You have to hang out with Kevin Marks more often. You look at the world more positively.
I screw you. But it doesn't work with I patent you. So there you go. Thank you.
I sue you.
I sue you is 133. 133. Thank you, Lauren, for being here. Really great to meet you. Lauren Weinstein is at lauren.vortex.com. And, of course, on Google Plus, you should all circle him.
All circle Lauren. Take my word for it. You're going to like it.
Immediately. Weinstein. Actually, if you go to Lauren, Lauren.vortex.com, there's a Google Plus button
great
right
blog.
There. Easiest way to do that. Thank you for being here, Lauren.
Real pleasure being on. It's been great meeting you guys. And I've been a big fan of the show for a long time. So this has been a real honor for me.
Well, we'd like you to come back. Now that you know the way.
Yeah. Is there any great ancient technology in that case behind
you? I love this component stereo behind you.
Yeah, well, this is probably the best one right here, which is an old hardware MIDI synthesizer. Ooh. I haven't used it, in ages, but it's kind of fun. You turn it on, you press two buttons at once, and it plays the demo tune. So that's what
that's all I ever get on those things, the demo tune. That's as far as I ever get. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com. That's his blog, a great place to start in getting into the world of Jarvis. He's also a professor of journalism, if you're lucky enough to attend the City University of New York, and the author of Public Parts, which you must all read. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. And Gina will be back next week. She had a good family thing to do, but we miss Gina.
And, of course, if you're into Android, All About Android, which Gina hosts along with Jason Howell and Ron Richards, is a great show all about Android, of all things, on Wednesday nights. You're going to...
Monday nights.
Pardon me. Monday nights on the Twit Network. Thank you, Kevin Marks, for being here.
Thank you.
Kevin's surrounded by a murder of crows. Pardon me?
There's only two left, so it's an attempted murder now.
Tuesday nights, not Monday night. Tuesday nights.
Oh, you're right.
All about
last night was Tuesday.
Some of us get confused about what day it is.
Yeah, some of us work a little too hard to remember what day it is.
I'm exhausted. What day is this? Is it Friday yet?
Yeah, Wednesday night would be tonight.
You know, you all get Monday off because it's President's Day, but we'll be back here Wednesday, every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 now, UTC on twit.tv. Kevin Marks, thank you for being here. Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you all for watching. We'll see you next week. This Week in Google.